I always push about 10 different buttons. Guys, all right. I'd like to welcome everybody to the July 19th, 2021 special meeting of the Marysville Board of Education. Can we have a roll call, please?
Mr. Luke?
Here.
Ms. Savage?
Here.
Ms. Powers?
Here.
Mr. Smith?
Here.
Ms. Devine?
Here. And so today, the purpose of our special meeting is to hear kind of a presentation from Knowledge Works, and I know you've set this up. Diane and Ashley, I think, have been working together on this. So if you'd like to kind of give us a little intro and stuff,
sure,
we'll get going.
Sure. It's more than a presentation. We'll be doing some group work as well. Jason and Robin have kind of set up for us. Typically, Knowledge Works would come in. I think they are still not allowing travel. So Jason, I think, is joining us from Pennsylvania. Robin's on vacation somewhere at the beach and agreed to join us as well. She's definitely been a thought partner with us since really we wrote the grant for the STEM Early College building. So really helped guide our thinking and challenge us as well as I think we've challenged her. So they are going to work with us. So for Jason's area of specialty is really forecasting. So thinking about, especially coming off our global pandemic, how the world might look different in the future as a result of the things that we've learned and the impacts on education. And that will help drive some of our thinking. So we'll have some interactive parts to that. But I think it would be great if you guys kind of introduced yourself and maybe your passions around the school board and maybe time on the board, and then I'll have Jason and Robin do an intro as well. Sound good?
Great.
Okay.
Nan, would you like to start us off?
Okay. Hi, I'm Nan Savage. I've been on the board for 5 years. I'm the kind of newbie on the board. I was initially appointed to finish up someone's term, and then a four-year elective period up for re-election in November. So my passion is education, especially literature education and social studies type education. I'm a great supporter of extracurricular activities. In addition to that, for a balanced educational experience for our students. I've learned a lot about our disadvantaged students over the last 5 years. Sometimes people from the outside don't see all the schools do for disadvantaged students, and that's been my biggest kind of awakening moment.
I'm Amy Powers. This is my 10th year on the board. Raised all my children here, then went to school, graduated from Marysville. Now I have 11 grandchildren, some of who have already graduated and still going through the system. And I just want to keep the great standards that we have here at the school for my next generation coming.
I'm Dick Smith. This is finishing up my 8th year of 2 terms on the board. I'll be up for re-election this November. I was a retired educator. I taught in the Marysville district for 32 years. I taught in another district for 7. And I've, with the 8 years on the board, I've had most of my life in education. Both of my sons graduated from Marysville High School. I've got 5 grandchildren. 4 of them are enrolled, 1 graduated this past spring. As a former teacher in the district, I was president of the teachers' union on several occasions and involved in negotiations and so forth. At one time, was preparing to go on strike. I think my passion, I guess, is trying to make sure that we do the things right by the teachers and also the kids. I think I tend to look at things in terms of not only just what's happening with the students, but also what's going on with the staff, custodians, bus drivers, and those people. I used to try to say thank you to at least one custodian every day. when I was teaching. So.
Okay. I'm Sue Devine, and this is my 10th year on the board as well. Amy and I ran together 10 years ago. And let's see, my husband graduated from Marysville Schools, so my husband's family's been in Marysville forever. Our three kids graduated from Marysville Schools. I have two grandchildren now that are just almost three and just over one, so a couple more years until they're in the system. I love the idea of education and lifelong learning. And I think what's really excited me about being part of the Marysville School Board is just seeing how innovative we've been. And then also there's just always been a feeling in Marysville of collaboration. And so seeing all of our different partnerships that give our kids so many unique opportunities to learn hands-on, real-life experiences, those kinds of things. So that's kind of, I'm really excited to hear what you guys have to share with us today, because I feel like this last year has opened up some doors quicker than they might have been opened in the past without the pandemic. So we could have done without the pandemic, but, you know, got to look at the positive side. So that's for me.
Hi, Jason. Hi, Robin. I'm Brian Luke. I'm same period on the board as Dick. We came in the same, about 8 years now. And I've had kids in the district. I've had stepkids, foster kids. I'm not from Marysville like these folks. Are you from Marysville?
20 years. So.
That's okay. So
you're still not.
No, I know.
But I'm. You know, I've done a lot in education too. I've taught at the university level. I've taught music from K through 12, and a lot of my family's in education. But I really got pulled in because of the families I worked with at church. I'm a church musician, and I worked with a lot of families, and I could see, you know, how they were affected by the everything going on in the schools. So I became passionate about doing my part, and I feel like this is a very interesting time. I feel like there's a lot of change going on, not just the pandemic, mm-hmm. just the whole society. So I'm glad that, like, Diane's keeping us moving forward and trying new things like the personalized learning and many other things. I feel for these kids today. They're going out into a job market that's changing year by year by year. You know, I don't know exactly what that means for education. How do we keep preparing kids for a world that's changing right in front of our faces?
I'm Todd Johnson. I'm the school treasurer. I've been here for close to 8 years now, and I guess I'm just here to make sure we can afford whatever vision we come up with.
We're going to be able to afford it, but we're going to spend a lot. I don't know.
Ash, you know Ashley and I, right? Or can you see Ash sticking in here?
Hi, guys.
Hi, Ashley. I cannot, but yes, I do know her. Diane, obviously, we know each other at this point.
Yep. Ashley, you're just off of the...
I know. That's okay.
I can see you.
We don't want to move closer to Todd. Things get tighter when we move that direction.
That chair there.
All right, Jason and Robin, do you guys mind introducing yourselves a little bit and getting us and kicking us off? It would be great.
Yeah, not at all. So it's fantastic to meet everyone, and I'm looking forward to spending a couple hours with you all, exploring the future and doing some meaning-making. My name is Jason Swanson. I work as the Director of Strategic Foresight for KnowledgeWorks. So in brief, I work on a team with three other professional futurists. The internal capacity to sort of look ahead and think about the future is one of the things that makes KnowledgeWorks somewhat unique. Is that that's simply all we're charged with by virtue of our position. And we'll get into this a little bit more within the context of the presentation, but when I say think about the future, what I really mean is we're making assumptions informed by evidence about what change means for a longer-term time horizon, so thinking 10, 20, 30 years ahead. And we're seeking to both make assumptions and then manage them so that we can get a clear sense of what happens when the future and change maybe zigs instead of zags, so we might be more prepared, hopefully less surprised, and to clarify really about what we want from a longer-term future, you know, commonly referred to as our vision. So I'm going to kick it over to a woman that needs no introduction, Robin.
You think by now I have this Zoom thing figured out with you. You're on mute. If I had a nickel for every time we've said that in the last year and a half, right? We can fund whatever Marysville wanted to do. Hi, everyone. It's so good to see you all, and I've met many of you in person and have had the privilege of working with Diane and Ashley and your team. Probably since, I think, maybe 2009 or 10 when you first received that funding from the governor and were able to rehab the middle school and to the STEM high school. And so lots and lots of forward thinking in Marysville as you really look at what you're learning from your past traditions and kind of bringing them forth into the future and figuring out what's best for kids. And Diane and I have a long, long history. She'll be the first one to tell you that once upon a time, she sat in my class when I taught in Reynoldsburg, and but a little middle school student. And even though I've been at Knowledge Works for quite a while and I'm a director of teaching and learning, I, like many of you that have been in the schools and in the systems, that was the best job I ever had, teaching eighth graders English language arts. Loved every minute of it. Privileged and blessed to be able to still contribute. And any time Diane calls, whatever the request, the answer is always yes, ma'am. And when she said she really wanted to take a moment and kind of do a pause and recalibrate a little bit, kind of check and adjust. I know that you've had lots and lots of changes, certainly the last 18 months, but also over the last several years with the shift and the transformation to the learner-centered experience, really shifting away from the word education and instruction to more focused on what is the actual learning experience for kids. And that speaks to, you know, Nan, your conversations and thoughts around disadvantaged kids and how we often don't tell those stories and how we're reaching them. Amy, those 11 grandkids of yours and what that means, because every single one of those youngsters has their own potential and needs and strengths and challenges. And so what does that look like as we really design a system that is focused on not always what's doing best for the adults, but really when kids are at the center, what does that mean? And because we understand, Dick, to your point, and Brian, to yours, we understand systems-level thinking. You know, we want everyone in that learning community to understand and embrace, and so it doesn't have to be an either-or. You know, the kids win, the adults lose kind of a thing. So what does that really look like? And I'm thrilled to be able to have some time to think about this and to figure out the path that you're on and if there are any adjustments that you all might decide to make collectively. And I will tell you, yes, I'm on vacation, but I'm down here just south of Clearwater, and so the red tide came in this morning. Mm. And outside, I've never experienced that before at the beach, and we took a walk this morning, and the fish are just, you know, they're just laying by the hundreds, washed up, and it makes me sad. But it was, Ashley and Diane, you would totally have appreciated this. It was like a STEM lesson in inquiry, because all we had was questions about why is this happening and what is it? And I thought, oh my God, this is like living science. And what does this mean? And then we started thinking about economic impacts and the geography, and the news report said changing weather patterns are going to, you know, fluctuate the tide and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, lots and lots to be experienced here. And also, what causes this and how much does the human endeavor, you know, add to this nastiness right now? And so lots and lots of questions, and it kind of got me in a good headspace to think a little intellectually this afternoon with all you guys. So I'm here to enjoy the ride as Jason facilitates us in some real powerful conversations. So thanks for hanging out with us. And by the way, I'm sorry about the lighting. They have like shunned me to one of the back bedrooms. So I'm making the best of it.
That's okay. We're just excited that you can join us from vacation, Robin. Thank you for the partnership. So for those of you that might have a laptop I'm going to drop a link into the chat. You could follow along our PowerPoint should you choose. Keeping with everything, you know, the theme of the past year, this is going to be a learning experience, whereas we're quite used to facilitating online. This might be my first experience where I am online, you all are all in one room. So I'm going to ask for your grace as we navigate some small group work that normally we would do by virtue of a breakout room just through Zoom. So drop in the link into the chat now should you want to follow.
And Ashley made copies, so we're handing those out.
Oh, terrific.
The same one. Okay.
It's the worksheets, Jason, so I don't know if it's exactly.
Wonderful.
Okay.
Yeah, so, and then I'm going to do a screen share. Whoever's hosting, would you be able to give me permission to share?
I will. Should have it.
All right, thank you. All right, so away we go. And it starts me right where I don't want it to. Told you it'd be a learning experience.
We don't have these, I don't think.
All right, folks. So as I mentioned, Robin and I were joining from an organization that you know fairly well. But I'm calling our little session today Forging the Future of Learning at MBSD. And in short, we're going to do a couple of things today. We're going to, one, first think about inbound change, right? So this is the change that we're experiencing as a community, as a learning community specifically, and we're going to make meaning from it. And we're going to use that exploration of change to do a few things. The first of which is to clarify those aspects of changing futures that we find positive or desirable. So in a way, we're going to look at a changing landscape as a way to clarify our vision just a little bit, or even just to beginning to interrogate our past vision. And then from there, we're going to do a little bit of sense-making. We're going to shift from thinking about inbound change to thinking about outbound change. So as a board, you're tasked with a lot, right? So as we start to really consider how thinking about the future might make clear some desirable elements of change, I want us to think from a 30,000-foot view as you start to think about your strategic plan from a board's perspective. What might we be missing now, right? So what types of roles, services, offerings, partnerships, broad strategic areas that we might need to think about or to enact to move us closer to those elements of preferred futures? So this is usually what we would call the design or adaptation phase of futures thinking. But I want to start this off with just a brief check-in. So if you all can see this board, this is one of my favorite icebreakers. I want you to just take a look, and then I realize that you all don't have a chat box, so I'll invite you to just say where you're at right now. But which one of these characters best represents you? Now, as I look at this, for me, I'm probably either like an 11 or 12 or maybe like a number 2, right? I'm really excited to explore the future with you all and like get you to scale this tree.
Well, today I feel like a 5.
Oh, I feel like 5, okay.
I fell down off the rope.
I'm a 10. How's that? I'm just kind of like, I started climbing up there, and I'm looking out saying, wow, this is exciting.
Yeah, perfect.
I've always wanted to say I'm a 10, you know. So.
I'm going to say I'm a 20. I'm excited for the future here coming up.
Awesome.
I think I'm 15. I'm glad to see you.
Okay. I feel like I'm number 4 there. I just feel like my feet are firmly on the ground. I'm in a good mood, and I'm enjoying looking at everybody and everything around us.
Great.
I thought you were offering to pick me up.
I'm going to kind of edge away from you because you look a little angry.
Maybe a 16. I don't know, they look like they're having a lot of fun there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well,
they do. Although I question the wisdom of, like, that position.
Exactly. Like you're in a tree.
I was going to say, are you the older?
I know, yeah, like back. A piggyback there.
Yeah. I feel like a two. I'm really ready to get back to the work and like kind of use the pandemic to catapult us, but also return to kind of what we know and can look forward to in the future and help people get there.
Love it.
I'll say I'm number nine, swooping in to make sure that we don't spend too much money.
It looks like you're about to collide into me, number four, like knock me off my feet.
Swinging on the rope with fiscal
standards. That's what you said. We got plenty of money. We're okay. And he's talking about
and then I'm going to end up the number five.
Yeah, Todd, I was going to suggest number 13. You're sitting here. You're going to do what?
So, because I'm just simply listening and you all are zoomed out, I want to give space to everyone. Has everybody had a chance to weigh in?
Yes.
Yeah.
Awesome. Robin, are you, any of these numbers strike you?
I love it. And this is a great graphic that I haven't seen before. So thanks for always keeping it fresh, Jason. I think I'd like to think I'm a 15 where I'm kind of waving like, hey, the view is great from up here. Come on up. But I'm probably more like maybe a 3. I usually need a boost. And let's just get real clear. 19 is a lot of the reality as well. It's like I'm exhausted, right? So not
now. You've been climbing too long.
So thanks for that. I hope that you know we can also end this in a really positive, generative place as well. So I mentioned we'll talk a little bit about futures thinking because this is the frame for which I join you, the frame for which we'll be spending our time together. So what you see here is a foresight teaching tool called the Cone of Plausibility, right? And it's really designed to illustrate a couple things. The first of which is this idea that the future is just an inherently uncertain place. And that you can see the farther we get out in time, the wider that cone becomes, right? And really the reason for that is just the more stuff happens, right? The more we think out farther and farther and farther out, the more variables we have to contend with. And we know this is true from a planning perspective. We feel this in our personal lives. If I said, what are you going to do for the next 2 hours? You'd tell me with great accuracy. We're going to listen to this guy talk about the future. If I said, what are you going to do for the next week? You'd have some general idea. But if I said, what are you going to do for the next 30 years? You would have some vague guesses. So as I mentioned, the futurism, thinking about the future, future studies, whatever you want to call it, is really about making and managing assumptions about change. So as that cone gets wider and wider and wider, the more assumptions we have to make and manage. So one of the ways we manage all these assumptions is by describing a range of futures. So we're not in the business of predicting the future, but we're in the business of depicting a wide range of possibility. And as futurists, we like to say that there's three types of futures, of the three P's. So we've got the possible future, which would be like the entire white of the screen, right? Anything can happen. It seldom does. I could win the lottery, right? It's possible. It's not super probable, right? The second type of future is, I just alluded to, it's a probable future. So thinking about those trends, thinking of in systems, making informed assumptions, we get to a place of more probability. It's not a guarantee that it will happen, but it's not something wild like, I'm going to win the lottery, a UFO is going to land on the front lawn, right? But it's more within the bounds of plausibility. So our third future, it's my favorite future. I think it's the most important future. Those are preferable futures. This is what we want to happen. So if possible futures and probable futures are all about that change that's coming and it's impacting us, then our vision, our preferable future, is about exercising our own agency to create futures, to create strategic plans, to create new initiatives, so that we can steer the present through all those assumptions and wind up closer to that North Star, that why, right? Visions by nature are designed to be unachievable, but they are really, really good at being North Stars. So we can think about how we channel time, money, resources in a way that we find desirable to get to a future that is more humane, right? That is one that we collectively agree that we want. So with that, this is a time to invite you all to really start to think about what you want. So rather than saying, like, if my vision is this or the school's vision is this, I think personally that it's really important to describe feelings of the future. You know, a lot of times when we start talking about vision, we fall into a really transactional space. So that feeling, that quality of the future is really important because it acts as sort of our barometer, our guardrails. So as we start thinking about strategic planning, new initiatives, even your role in terms of governance, if those new initiatives, if that new thinking, if that larger vision doesn't have those qualities that you're about to define, it's probably not the right vision for you, right? So what I'd like you all to do right now is take a couple seconds and begin to think about ways that you might describe what you want for the future of learning by just using old adjectives: flexible, configurable, joyful. You're not limited to anything. And then simply just begin to call them out. So I would love to hear what's on your mind. As you think about this, I've heard a lot of interesting things from this. The most interesting one I've ever heard is I've heard a gentleman tell me that he wanted the future of learning to be sexy. And I thought it was brilliant, because if you could make it fashionable, desirable in that way, as we think about things like lifelong learning, relevant learning, interest-based learning, a lot of interesting pictures come to mind. So if anybody's feeling particularly inspired, I want to hear what you're thinking.
I just love hands-on learning, group learning, creativeness, fun, challenging.
Inspirational.
Mm-hmm. Love
I like the word joy.
Yes.
I would like people, students to be able to attain joy in school, which don't necessarily come together all the time.
Mm-hmm. There are two words, personal and serendipity.
Very nice.
I jotted down relentlessly curious and safe.
Hmm.
I also wrote down undetermined.
Can you tell me more about that?
I think that in education we fight to keep things that are already predetermined. And so in order to change education, I think we have to be okay not knowing what the outcome looks like all the time.
You're preaching to the choir with that. 100%. Yes.
I said safe, fun, exciting, interesting, cooperative, different, creative, advanced, joyful, kind, loving, useful, healthy, responsive. That's just a start.
Beautiful.
I couldn't keep up.
Responsive.
I tried to write everyone's down, but I'm done. It's recording.
Yeah. Colorful.
And the voice out of.
I think caring. Caring needs
caring,
to be.
Caring. I like that.
Mm-hmm. I think life, too. Life has to be in the life skills.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say practical.
So we might say relevance, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Real world.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I said advanced because I like the idea that our kids learn more than we did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that's a great thing.
Mm-hmm. That's terrific. So thank you for that. I want you to keep those responses in the back of your head as we start to think about the future and both possibilities for the district as well. Like I said, these kind of act as our guardrails, right? As we start to think about these new initiatives or where your planning might lead you, keep those qualities front of mind. Is this joyous? Is this safe? Is it relevant? Does it have that real world piece to it, right? So it's a powerful filter. So, you know, if that vision again was all about that outbound change, when you were all introducing yourselves to Robin and I, you know, it came up that it feels like a lot's changing. And to be sure, a lot is. So typically, as futurists, we look at change that is impacting learning. And I think over the past year, we've had so much change within that domain of learning. We should review a little bit about what that change looks like. So those changes include an increase in the personalization of learning. We found in talking to educators, even if they're not personalizing learning by name, to simply get through last year, it's assumed some level of personalization around specifically around students' needs in this moment. We've seen a severe uptick in terms of the increase in ad hoc partnerships, networks, and ecosystems. So a rearranging could be temporary of how we structure learning, right? And again, this is accelerated by the pandemic in order to meet learners' needs and really community needs. I know locally here, so I'm joining you from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, we've saw the school district develop deep unofficial partnerships just simply to keep families fed. Deep partnerships with the out-of-school time learning community to help with things like professional learning communities and professional development. We've seen, again, a sharp increase in the awareness and desire to incorporate social and emotional learning directly into formalized learning. So not as enrichment, but to weave it in as a major piece of how we organize and think about the future of teaching and learning. Of course, we've seen a large-scale rollout of online and hybrid learning, so we're seeing much more choice in modes for formal learning. So online, hybrid are now choices that, by and large, aren't going away for most of the country. We're seeing more input and connection, as I mentioned, between formal learning and out-of-school time providers, and just a general growing awareness around the inequities in learning and education. Certainly, you know, driven home by the circumstances of the pandemic. But if we were to zoom out, there's a lot of other trends happening that certainly impact learning. So we are education is a nested system. So it bumps up against other systems, things like employment, health and human services, housing. But if we begin to look at those trends that really have either special promise or in some instances peril, for public education systems, we've seen a massive increase in civic activism, particularly led by young people. This could be things around social justice, it could be climate change, but the idea that we have massive cohorts of activated youth that are seeking to fulfill this role of change agents is a really interesting trend that we've seen really brewing for the past 6 years. We're seeing a really big reconfiguration of work due to automation and an expanding gig economy. And this has taken on a really interesting shape where we're seeing a great resignation right now, where a lot of employees and workers are really questioning their own orientation to work on the heels of the pandemic. So all the way from opting out of work to, if we look at major companies, upping their base rate to usually around $12 to $15 an hour, creating incentive structures, certainly trying to preserve remote working environments in some instances, there is a dramatic retooling of the employment economy, or the employment sector, that I think that we're just starting to grasp outside of just automation. We're seeing a proliferation of artificial intelligence really across every sector of our lives. You know, this is from consumer-facing things where we're really using AI to really curate vast menus of choice, to using things like GPS to get me from point A to point B, to disruptions in the employment market. A big increase in climate volatility, unsurprising, especially given the last year. If we look at the heat dome, the Pacific Northwest, Robin mentioned the red tide. Last summer, we watched pretty much the entire West Coast burn. So the climate and weather are all changing, which is going to have huge implications for public education. as we spend time, money, and treasure to rebuild communities and people go on the move. And that's a bit of a preview is that we're now seeing new migration patterns. So people are moving in mass, and this could be to for new working structures created by the proliferation of remote work. It could be simply seeking more permanence for jobs. It could be fleeing climate events to find a place that is simply more livable, not on fire, right? So all of these trends are really jumping off points for us to make and manage assumptions, as I mentioned, to consider a wide range of alternative futures, which can then begin to illuminate areas that we might need to poke, prod, push as we think about planning for the future of the district. So recognizing that was a fire hose of change, I want to do some quick reflections. So thinking about that that myriad of trends that you just heard, as we reflect on those, what are your initial reactions? This could be, man, this AI thing is going to keep me up at night, all the way out to, like, you know, maybe this creates new occasions to lean even deeper into personalized learning if we know SEL is going to be a major component going forward. So I'll invite you to share out whatever's top of mind, but as we reflect on these changes, just what comes to mind for you all?
You know, they say about the migration thing, that kind of goes with our housing thing. All the industry that's moving to Columbus is frankly amazing, and with it, it's bringing a lot of people, seemingly with a lot of money, because some of the homes that are being built are just tremendous. Mm-hmm. So I think we've got a huge influx of new people, and I also expect that their expectations as they move closer to Marysville are going to be maybe different. They've come from different states to here. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to have some sort of impact, and a lot of them seem to be coming from tech industry. You know, we've got Facebook, we've got Google, we've got Microsoft, I just read about a couple new biologic medication companies coming to Columbus. So I think that what they're going to want for their workforce as far as education, and what they're going to want for their children as far as education, I think is going to evolve pretty quickly.
Yeah, the one that, actually there were two that kind of jumped out at me. The activism by students. I know I had several times during my teaching career where I had students that were very eager and very excited to do things, and so it was a matter of trying to help them get themselves organized a little bit and be able to work efficiently to try to achieve their goal. But it created a bit of a challenge because sometimes you had to kind of walk the line of, you know, what the students wanted to do was going to upset the community, some of the, you know, the older people in the community or some of the political entities in the community and so forth. And on the way in which the workforce is changing, I see that as a real challenge for us, because we have known for some time that we're preparing students for a future that we cannot yet envision. And it's becoming more invisible, more invisible to us, at least to me, as I'm sitting here.
Well, technological change is very fast, and I mean, you mentioned automation, but also all these new hybrid models. And I feel like sometimes we're not very good at keeping up. Like, we'll have technologies out there affecting all of our lives before we've actually figured out how they need to be managed. You know, and I saw this year with where we were forced to have kids stay home, and we grabbed at the technologies that were available, and some of them worked for some kids and some of them didn't work at all for some kids. But at the same time, there's going to be a lot of pushing, I think, to do more and more remote and more hybrid, and because it may be cheaper to do that. And what I would like to see is us to be careful to keep track of what actually works to educate kids. You know, where does the face-to-face in the same room, you know, where does that really work for kids? And keep that in mind, even as there are other forces that, you know, drive education another way. The other thing that jumped out was the SEL, because that's another one where we're almost like forced to do it because the kids are showing up incapable, unable to learn that day, right? And we're so aware that they can't learn if they're in trauma or devastated or hungry. And so we're learning to address all those. But the positive side is it's really great. Like, I grew up in a school system that I really hated. It was inhuman. And I think a lot of us did. You go to school and you sit in a little desk in a row 6 hours a day for 13 years of your life. I hated school, and I'm a lifelong learner. So I think what's happening now with really working on relationships and teaching kids how to trust each other, you know, and the other things that we're doing, it's all really, really promising.
I think Brian makes a good point. We did learn through technology, and thank goodness we had one-to-one already, and most of the kids had already been on the system, so at least when they were at home, they had some understanding of how the system works. But I seem to notice that technology has grown on our lives, and especially our young people's lives, much more so than what we had anticipated. Like, they have difficulty with personal relationships and, you know, talking face-to-face sometimes because they become very institutionalized into dealing with this and this, as opposed to having conversations with people and developing actual relationships with people. So I think the schools need to keep in mind that we have to keep some sort of that balance in place too, because they're here 13, sometimes 14 years, you know, alt-K now. We can't guarantee that they're getting that experience outside of here.
In which I think that's one thing that strikes me, if you think back to when you went to school versus now, just how many more responsibilities are put on public education because of the social-emotional issues, because of the socioeconomic issues, and that was one, that's another big one, I think, as people are moving in and housing prices are going up, and that divide is growing between the haves and the have-nots. I mean, to me, that's a huge challenge for public education.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that we have talked about extensively and worked on tirelessly, I know our administration has done yeoman-like work on this, but people outside of schools today, outside of public education, have really no idea what's going on in their classrooms. And in talking with people, we all know that whatever Bill remembers from 40 years ago when he was in third grade is what he expects to still be going on in the classroom. Mm-hmm. So it's somehow or another we need to bring the outside people in so that they can see what's going on within our schools, because we can't do it ourselves. We've got to build our relationship with our community so that they're supportive of the things we're trying to accomplish.
Which was one of the points that was on there, was just kind of that explosion of partnerships. And we already have lots of great partnerships, but we still saw some new ones last year that I think can be promising for the future.
Yeah, I think that's a big one. I don't know if any of us yelled it out in our little adjective exercise. I think I said cooperative, but what I'm thinking is we cannot go on indefinitely with this fracture between the community and the schools. Mm-hmm. It's actually dangerous when 90% of the community has no idea what we're doing or why we're doing it. I'd like to see that trend, you know, continue to improve. I don't know how.
Yes. How do you bring the public along, right, and make them fully realize, like, this is a public school, right? Yeah. It's as much as theirs mm-hmm. as it is yours.
Right.
And that those walls should be really, really porous. And part of being a good steward of the community is having an awareness of what's happening in the school. So I hear everybody in their reactions to these trend lines. And, you know, I think especially that the SEL piece, right, is that we cannot discount the gravity of the situation. And that if we take a step back and we leave out the inconvenience we feel from COVID, the reality is your staff and your young people have lived and continue to live through a pandemic. So there will be SEL issues that we can't even conceive of as we try to hurry up and return to normal, by and large trying to ignore the fact that the last year happened. So I think that, you know, that's going to be a really key uncertainty that we're going to have to navigate in the short run. And I sometimes wonder that in addressing that, might we be able to reintroduce ourselves to the community in ways that maybe are different, so they can become more educated about what's happening within the school rather than blaming the school for things. This is just things that tend to keep me up at night, right? I don't have a solid answer, but my suspicion is these things are tied together in very real ways. So I want to move into a little bit of sense making. So, you know, moving from sort of the emotional response and the...
Hey, Jason.
Yes.
You know, it's so unlike me to remain quiet this long. So.
I was wondering.
I'm just going to say this. Aren't you glad you showed up tonight? As you're all having these conversations, and we're so happy to be a part of it, I'm just wondering how many other... you talk about we want our communities and our kids and our parents and families to be cooperative and collaborative. You are modeling that right now. And to be totally transparent, what a model for leading with vision and purpose and being lifelong learners you all are exhibiting right now. So I just want you to kind of put that in the front of your minds. It's fantastic.
Couldn't have said it better. Thank you, Robin. excuse me. So, as I mentioned, alternative futures, right? There are ways to manage a lot of the changes that we just discussed, because, frankly, we have no data for the future. Everything I talked about, that data ends right this second, right? So when we say increase, we're making an assumption that perhaps that increase will continue. So alternative futures, as I mentioned, they're rooted in this idea of inbound change. They help us to make and manage assumptions. And we do so by describing a range of futures, which help to inform both vision and create more robust plans and strategy. There was a futurist named Jim Data, who was one of the first, like, big American futurists, also first academic futurists, ran a program out of the University of Hawaii until about a decade ago. And Jim had a really astute observation in that describing change and telling stories about the future, they all kind of fell into archetypes, big buckets. You know, we might describe a scenario or future where the changes we see continue unabated, right? A continuation scenario, if you will. We might describe a future that is radically transformational, where those changes accelerate and the plans and intentions of stakeholders that are guiding us on our journey, those are wildly successful. There might be a reversal or a collapse scenario where maybe trends recede and we find ourselves in a bit of a predicament. So he, I think rightly so, recognized that there are commonalities to these stories based on the key assumptions that we're making. So we're going to pull from Mr. Dater's work just a little bit. And what I'm going to ask you all to do is to break into small groups. And Diane and Ashley, I'm going to look to you to kind of circle people up or huddle people up. And within that packet that I gave you, you'll notice there's an alternative futures instruction, and it's divided into three groups. So your task in your small group is to just pick one of those pieces. And I want to make sure we have representation across all three. So what I'm going to ask you to do is to organize into three small groups, however you choose, for whoever's group that Anne is part of, you're going to be group one. Dick, your group, you're going to be scenario group two. And Brian, you're going to be scenario three. And all of these scenarios fall into one of Dater's archetypes. So you have a continuation, a transformation, and a collapse scenario. So we're going to spend about 20 minutes in the future. With your small group, I want you to really read through that scenario. Now again, these are depictions. They're not predictions. But enough is changing in this scenario to start a conversation amongst your small group to really think about, hey, out of this, like, what does this mean for our district as we think ahead? And you'll notice beyond the instructions, there's a note capture or a template. It looks a lot like this. And that prompt is quite simple. What does this mean for us? So, go through, capture everything that you can. I'm going to ask for each group to have a reporter. And that reporter, when it comes time to share out, I want you to share what is one big critical difference for your school, for the school district, between present reality and that future you looked at. So before we go, we go heads down, are there any questions right now?
I think we're good.
Yep. That sounds great. So, Anne, group one. Dick's group, you're going to be group two. Brian's group, you're going to be group three. Sound good?
Yep.
All right, so we're going to go off to the races. We're going to spend about 20 minutes in this space, and we'll come back and we'll do some whole group share-outs. I'm here if you need me. I can hear you. So if you have any questions, if you're like, look, this is just clear as mud, holler, and Robin and I will be happy to help.
So, okay. I would say just self-select. It doesn't matter if you want to do...
Okay.
If you want to work by who's next to you or mix it up. So, Nan's group one, Dick's group two, Brian's group three.
If you want to... You guys...
We'll be group two.
And are you guys
going to
guess?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'll
sit
here.
I'll float.
So we are...
There you go. Okay, you're a floater.
I'm a floater.
Who's with us?
I'll come over.
Okay.
Well, okay, so we're starting with three, and it's... Did you find it? Yep.
Sorry.
Okay. Okay, so key assumptions.
Do you want to take... Does anybody want to take notes? There's a page in here.
Work is increasingly big or project-based. Climate change.
Oh, is there a note pad in here? If you turn about three or four pages in, there's a blank page. So the scenario is... I'll just read it out loud. Return to normal. Trajectories of change are slow and in some cases reverse over the next decade. Great. Plans and intentions of stakeholders are largely unsuccessful. So we got the like broader contextual changes. Migration patterns, declining revenue have put Ohio into a period of austerity. Contracting budgets have caused a reversal in innovative education programming. An overall retraction in the trend towards personalization and other interest-based learning initiatives. Automation has caused unemployment to rise with no changes to the social safety net. And then it goes on the next page. Due to loss of tax revenue and shifting budget priorities, state spending on education retracts. The retraction causes Ohio to fall back on standardized tests as new and innovative models for assessments have been deemed too costly. With districts underfunding, they leverage technology for the sake of efficiency. Mass adoption of adaptive learning platforms. Shrinking budgets also impact the OST sector, which is, what is OST? OST is something off, I don't know. He mentioned it earlier. I think it's providers outside the schools, causing a contraction of formal OST providers. The overall contraction of the learning landscape has caused a proliferation of partnerships with ecosystems blooming across the state, fostering true independence in which learning communities share resources and expertise in order to meet learner needs as a resilient strategy. So that's the scenario. And then the prompt is, what might the scenario mean for our district? So it sounds like there's more than one thing going on. There's contracting school budgets at the same time that there's higher unemployment without any increase in the social safety net. So there's things going on in the schools and in the community.
Right.
And then new and innovative models for assessments have been deemed too costly, and districts leverage technology for the sake of efficiency. Mass adoption of adaptive learning platforms.
I mean, automatically, like, my budgeting side tends to go back to, we're going to be asking for more levy opportunities. Like, that's superficial kind of thing.
And it just sounds like that's not an option based on this scenario, because we've got to assume that the
high
unemployment and everything's shrinking, so that's probably not likely in this scenario.
I think the declining revenue, period of austerity, like, imagine that our budget was simply not, or let's say from the state, was just not, it was not maintaining. Like,
right.
Like when we had the $1 million cut, let's suppose that just like as a regular thing. And then I don't know about property taxes, but I suppose that could go, that could start a downward trend as well.
Yeah.
If valuations go down.
Right.
Or if there's more default or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So it is possible. I don't usually think this way, but it certainly is possible.
Yeah.
We could have just as many kids, but like significantly less money. It's, to put it in a nutshell.
Right.
Right, but I think this kind of launches some of the things we've been talking about, opportunities to learn beyond brick and mortar spaces, right? So how?
Yeah.
What are ways that we can position ourselves to create learning opportunities outside of our school that actually, you know, still align to outcomes? You can figure percentages at the local restaurant, and it's not less valuable than learning it from a teacher, right? When you're, like, you know, those kind of opportunities is kind of what, where my mind.
Well, that's kind of where my mind goes. It's, I don't think, I think we learned a lot this year, and one of the things we learned is kids don't need necessarily 6 times 5 hours of contact with a teacher. They need contact, I think. But if we have to leverage these mass adoption of adaptive learning platforms, doesn't mean the kids never get to see their teachers. It's almost like you have to be smarter.
And so not, flexible learning opportunities,
yeah.
Right? So it's not one size fits all. We're going to have to truly jump into that.
I mean, it could happen that we can't hire new teachers for a while, and we have to, but that doesn't mean we have to put 35 kids in a classroom. We could have them
science.
You know, learning remotely for part of the week.
Well, yeah, and actually, you know, employing some of those strategies we learned through hybrid here, right?
And this one, this line here is really interesting at the very end. Ecosystems blooming, fostering true independence in which learning communities share resources and expertise. So maybe even increasing ways that kids learn outside of the building, not even on these remote learning platforms, but even like internships or, you know, learning opportunities that come about through cooperation rather than paying, you know, a huge staff. But the other thing that would be worrisome in this is like all this SEL, the fact that we have underserved kids already, just in normal times, right? We already have kids that are in poverty and that have trouble. You know, their learning outcomes aren't as good because of that. And what if that increases? What if that group gets bigger and bigger, right? And we're not getting more resources to you know, because that's the line in the scenario is, where was it? No changes to the social safety net.
I think for schools, it comes back to that social agency, like asset building for kids. Like, how are we helping kids build asset, community assets as far as people? We know that's the number one way to support kids in the SEL framework. So when we think about asset building and mentoring and those types of things for students, I think that's off the educational academic platform, but it's the skill kids need in order to, in this kind of system, to be successful. So what do those things look like? How can we help develop those partnerships for kids, not the school district at large, but partnerships for students?
Right, we could have more staff whose job is to foster those situations. Right, not everybody's a teacher. There are people whose job is to find ways for kids to learn from people in the community without paying them.
Hey, folks, I just want to give you a 10-minute warning, so we're about halfway through. Pardon my interruption.
That's all right. I think two ways for us to go to the students, right? One of the things we found were effective is finding ways for us to go to community hubs and offer opportunities to read and to do math, so kind of flipping where education, you know, is taking place too, right?
I mean, I don't know if this is possible, Diane, but what's happening in the larger business community, I've been talking to my kids who are out there working. They're close to 30. Mm-hmm. And like, one of my sons works in tech. And the company said, okay, we can come back to the office now, but it's voluntary. So it's Tuesday, Thursday, voluntary. So he went in Tuesday, three people came in. And he said, he looked around and he started talking to people. Most of, like half of his fellow workers have moved in the last year because they were all working remotely every day and it was working fine. So the question I'm raising is it possible that someday in the schools we won't need as many buildings? Because that's what's going to happen to these companies. They won't have to rent as much space. It's going to be rather a lot of change for the commercial real estate market, but for the companies, they're going to get a big drop in rent costs. And maybe that's possible for schools too. If we find the happy medium between having kids in the building and helping them learn elsewhere, we may not need our whole vision of how many buildings we need may change over time.
I'd be interested to see worker satisfaction in that equation, right? How much their workforce is it, are they more satisfied from that? It would sound like it if only three people came to work, right? Because we discussed that in-house here. Like, are there jobs that don't have to come to work every day?
It's very strange, though, because a lot of people get their job satisfaction by being face-to-face with their core workers. But like when we went back where I work at church, and we started having in-person meetings, I didn't like them. I didn't enjoy those meetings because there's a lot of idle chit chat. There's a lot of just like, you know, wasted time. And when we're on Zoom, people are pretty much like, let's talk about whatever the issue today is. You know, so that was a surprise to me. Mm-hmm. And I think my son Adam found the same thing. It's like, I didn't get anything out of going into the building. Like, I'm fine. That really surprised me. So, but I think with the kids, well, didn't we see already a little bit this year that it's really not good for a lot of them to just be home 5 days a week? There's got to be contact with other kids and with adults. But where that level is, where that ideal level is, it may not be 5 days a week, 6 hours a day, right?
And it might not be the adults, might not be teachers.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we're suggesting. It could be other platforms of...
I mean, this is a dire situation, but not everything is negative. Like, here's an example, the band program. So, you know, Bill Thyssen and all the marching band guys, they recruit volunteers from the community every summer. A lot of them. I don't think any of them get paid. And they come in. My wife is one of them. She worked with the saxophone section for 3 or 4 summers now. And there are these guys that work with the drum line every summer, and they love it. So there may be these untapped resources in the community of people who actually are capable of teaching certain things and don't mind stepping forward and doing it, you know, not for 40 hours a week, but, you know, little chunks.
Right.
And then you just need staff to sort of organize that. But I still think this would be a really difficult scenario. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There'd be a lot of anxiety, let's say, among the staff.
Because it really is taking the model we understand of education and flipping it on its head, right? And shaking it out. And I think that's always tough.
Well, plus it's forced on them. It's forced on people, which is, you know.
Right.
Nobody likes that.
Right. Well, and it, you know, I'm probably reading too much into it, but I see in this, you know, like I said, lots of failed tax levies, opportunities we've been in front of people.
Yeah.
High levels of frustration.
There's something in here about automation, isn't there? Like, something about automation takes off.
Going to be levy related or cut related.
Yeah.
But what I didn't get, Diane, was where it says the retraction causes Ohio to fall back on standardized tests as new and innovative models for assessment. Okay, so we don't do as many assessments, or we don't. Are they saying we don't score
right
as well?
Well, I think right now Ohio's time to trend away from standardized tests and look at other opportunities through personalized learning, and et cetera. So
there may be some areas in the schooling right now that could very well be cut, and that would be fine. Like the assessments, all that. I don't even know how much all that costs.
I think they're saying under this scenario, because revenues are down, the number of staff is down, which then makes personalized learning much harder to accomplish because you've got less staff. So the opposite of personalized learning is a one-size-fits-all state assessment, and that's what they're saying this is pushing a school towards. So our goal would then be to come up with a innovative way to continue to individualize assessments. And that's where we turn to Diane and say,
I mean, what about, I mean, kind of like we were talking, what if those businesses then came in and cohabitated, the word, in our buildings? So, you know, it says they have shrinking budgets as well. Maybe a finance company could be a part of our building and teach personal finance to our high school students, right?
Maybe. Well, that would, yeah. So for me, the upshot of this whole scenario is a lot of the things that we're doing right now could actually continue and may even be like crude or crucial or critical to get through it.
Sorry, team. Can you all hear me?
We're just ignoring you, Jason. Like any good group of students, we're still continuing the conversation.
Yes. I have to apologize. I don't have a very elegant way to bring you all back.
If I remember right, Robin used to have a great whistle or something to get our attention in seventh grade.
You're supposed to bang a yardstick on the table.
Or we use a harmonica.
That's right.
Oh, PAX.
Yes. That's right.
You just had the look, Diane. It was the stink eye, remember?
That's right. You did have a stink eye.
Does that translate through Zoom?
Yeah. I was going to say,
no,
Jason, I probably even have had one of those as an adult from Robin, but it's okay.
So it's been great sort of listening in to your conversations, what little I could kind of make out. And it sounds like you all had some rich conversation. So what I'm curious from each of these groups to hear about is just to describe like one critical difference, right, between our current reality and that future you had explored, but critical difference for this group, right? Because we're here to talk about plans and vision. But what came to the fore? What is that like jarring difference between our current reality and the future of your school?
On scenario one, I think one of our biggest issues was relationships are at risk.
Mm. Oh, that's a big one.
Can you recap your scenario?
Yeah, you want to elaborate? Okay. I think that's a really juicy one.
Yeah.
Okay, so learning in Ohio has become more personalized, but only in the context of formal learning. Falling short of student-centered transformation, many of the ad hoc networks and ecosystems developed during the pandemic have disappeared, leaving in their place peer-to-peer professional learning communities, which leverage digital technology to connect and share information. These personal learning communities have helped strengthen ties between teachers and the outside contractor providers of the online learning infrastructure rollout in 2021 has also led to schools offering learning experiences in partnership with OST sector. Ohio is testing out formative competency-based assessment pilots in certain districts, and due to political pressure, bold moves to address inequities and infuse SEL into schools has been left to districts and communities. So leaving out the SEL component and trying to seek equity in education and learning opportunities, that's going to hit us the hardest. That's the most personalized. Going to a digital-based system, it's going to create gaps, very similar to what we've seen based on our test results, where with the hybrid learning model, the students that were supported and had resources did pretty well, but the economically disadvantaged or disabled students were way below.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to continue that inequitable situation based on this scenario.
So surface level personalization, right? So we're thinking more linear change, a lot of digital tech, a lot of cracks to fall into. We could think of almost schooling as being more efficient and less humane in this instance, but I appreciate that sort of loss of relationships as being a critical difference and potentially something we would want to avoid.
Right.
thank you. And you were, I'm sorry, that's group one, I believe?
That's group one.
Group one. Group two, would you care to share?
Sue is going to admirably take over the presentation of our
and I'm sure Dick will chime in with comments as well. But so ours is called the learner-centered state. So it says, following the COVID-19 pandemic, the learning landscape in Ohio went through a transformation driven by youth, family, and educator activism. At the core of the transformation, it's adopted a radically learner-centered approach to organizing its education system, giving learners voice, choice, and agency in how they approach learning. There's extreme flexibility across the environments, ranging from classrooms, online learning, to learning in the community, to manage the experiences. Students utilize AI-enabled learning playlists, which help to capture and manage their experiences. SEL is also a key part of the learner's experience, with ODE developing a core set of SEL competencies for districts to help heal the trauma following the pandemic, as well as adopting a broader competency-based approach to assessing students' learning. It says the changes have contributed to a flourishing of learning ecosystems across the state and have broken down barriers between formal learning and OST. So I think, like, if you talk about a critical difference with ours, we felt like the only critical difference was kind of time and effort, that with more time and effort, I feel like what's happened here is the end result of the work that's been going on in our district. That's kind of our goal. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, with lots of flexibility that's tailored to the hopes and aspirations of the kids as well as the needs of our community. And just that focus on shared resources, expectations, but support. And then Dick, I'm sure he wants to also talk about staff, because we talked about the importance of how that plays in.
I've told Diane and others that I kind of feel like we're in the middle of something. And, you know, we've gotten a good start. It's taken us 6-7 years to get to where we are. We've got another 6 or 7 years. We'll be in a different place, hopefully much better. But looking at the staff and facilities, there's going to have to be a tolerance for less structure, be more responsive to the students. But to do that, the teachers are going to have to gain additional experiences and additional knowledge. And so one of the things that I've thought about off and on over 30 years or so is teacher sabbaticals, where they have an opportunity to go work in a factory or go work in an industry or take courses at a university. Just get away, get out, and enrich their own lives so that when they come back, they're better prepared to work with students. And Sue was talking about the facilities, and we discussed a little bit a multi-generational approach where, we are K to 100 in terms of our classes, where senior citizens or others in the community want to come in, take a history class, sit in on an English class, do those kinds of things, come in to bring in more perspectives, more ideas to make more of a connection, and help us to build the resources in our community to support the vast flexibility that seems to be demanded by our scenario, that our school can't possess all the stuff we need. And so we've got to, reconfigure our thinking as to, how we organize a school day and who constitutes a student and so forth. Mm-hmm.
That's beautiful. And what I'm hearing, too, is that what you both outlined, like the walls to that school, to public school generally, would be extremely porous, right?
Yes.
So the community's coming
yes.
in and out, right?
Yeah.
And it's that true ecosystem, like it's always fluxing and flexing, right? You're
right.
always finding the right combinations of things for any one period of time. That's very cool. All right, last but certainly not least, group number 3.
With our scenario, it was assumed that there was a big downturn in the economy in Ohio, high unemployment, school revenues going down. I think there was the connotation that as those things were happening, it's kind of puts a halt towards innovation. We're going back to just kind of one-size-fits-all state assessments and those things. I think when you look at our current reality,
we are adequately staffed so that we're able to do innovative things. The personalized learning that we do has shown great gains over the last several years in our student learning, and we're able to employ administrative leaders like Ashley to help push those things along. And then looking at the, the potential future there, I guess there's two paths there. There's one is making do and getting by because the revenue's going down versus, you know, finding an innovative way to continue to push forward with less and to keep innovating and keep pushing our, you know, what's been working with a certain revenue level and staffing level, keep pushing forward with that and finding a way to change it to a reduced resources.
Yeah, so what's it mean to continue to innovate in a constraint scenario, or constraint environment like that? Thank you all. So I want to kind of dive deeper, as I said. Act one, we're kind of talking about this inbound change piece, so let's flip a little bit and start to talk about the outbound change and thinking about how you all respond. So as we enter into our final act two here, we're going to call this little section, we're going to clarify vision by responding to that changing landscape. And we're going to go back to our small groups. And what we're going to do is, again, I'm going to ask you to pick a note taker and to pick a spokesperson. And we're going to keep this idea of these alternative futures front and center. If you need to go back and review, that's fine. But the first task here is, as a group, to discuss what elements of that alternative future you just looked at are either desirable, because even within the most dire collapse scenarios, there are going to be some elements in there that might be pleasing, that you might want to work towards. And then we're also, as a small group, I want you to talk about those things that we want to mitigate, right? Because, again, change is never a given, right? It's never great. It's never awful either. It's always a mixed bag. And then, after we've bulleted those out, I want you then to flip over, and we're going to do some gap analysis, right? So based on the above, I want you to generate ideas for your vision, for your board priorities, and your strategic plan, right? So where might the gaps be between where you want to go and what you just looked at by spending some time in the unknown, these alternative futures? And then how are you going to get there, right? How are you going to mine those gaps? So you'll find the prompts, you'll find worksheets with all the prompts in them. I'm going to do a quick time check. So it's 6:55. I'd like to spend about 20 minutes on this exercise. So however you want to divide that between sheets is totally up to you. And before we kind of tuck in for this, I want to make sure, is there any questions?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Are you saying that in our small group we should talk about all three alternative futures, or just the one that we already started talking about?
That's a fantastic question, and I apologize for my lack of clarity. Spend time in the one you just talked about, because you'll have a deeper understanding of that.
Okay, got it.
If we had all day, I'd say let's go for all of them. In fact, we'd be making scenarios. So. Any other questions? And thank you for raising that.
I think we're good to go.
All right, gang. So, need anything, Robin and I are here, and like I said, we'll spend roughly 20 minutes, and we'll come out and do a debrief and then move to close.
So are you still okay taking notes?
Sure.
So nobody else needs to be able to read them.
Oh, you found the
this
page
towards
where
the end. Like, it'll be like almost the third page from the very end.
I see.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to go back to the sheet that we were looking at, because there were some things that were sort of desirable.
Well, I think building resources for kids, right, and being able to learn in flexible ways, to me, is desirable.
Proliferation of partnerships was built into the scenario, and that's desirable.
Yeah.
I don't think it's desirable to rely to go back to standardized tests more and more.
Building a larger resource bank for kids, I think. Community resources. Yeah, I agree. Losing funds isn't desirable. Some of those things. I think the opportunity to rethink what our buildings are and what services.
Yeah, that was not... I don't know if that was explicitly mentioned in the scenario, but it does seem like it's something that could be either a mitigation or a... an idea for
and it's,
the
it's very frustrating because
for the plan, right? So we, like what we already did with the Hope Center building, what was that called? East?
Mm-hmm. Those East elements like, laid out for them? Well, I think even like what we're doing with Honda Marysville, they're using our building at night to take care of their workforce need and training their future employees. So creating more opportunities that even, you know, our kids could participate.
The mitigation... like, one of the things is reversal and innovative education programming, retraction in trend towards personalization. I think that should be mitigated. I think that's a huge loss if that's allowed to happen because of budget cuts.
The retraction of
so to some find some way to mitigate the reversal in innovative education and the retraction in personalized learning and other interest-based learning initiatives. So that's just like what to mitigate. That's not how.
Right.
That's just identifying the things that shouldn't be allowed to just kind of, you know, oh, we lost money, so we have to cut this, and this, and then we're done with it.
Right. So we'd want to continue to prioritize it through, I think, some of these potential community partnerships, right? So connecting kids to areas of passion. So we want to maintain that. Through tapping into community resources.
Right.
If there's allowing opportunities for kids to explore passions and areas of interest. Unemployment to rise.
Well, that's a...
Wow.
The only thing that could be positive about that is, like, you can't go on indefinitely dumping our social problems on the schools. That, you know, and if all the budgets are being cut, which is probably what would happen, it wouldn't just be the schools. It'd be a lot of the social services. It can't just be the schools that pick up the pieces. It won't work.
No, we don't want to move it out.
So there has to be more cooperation between the different sectors.
And I put some mitigation things for training necessarily.
Which for me translates into this third question, which is what are ideas for our vision, priorities, and plan? No, I think we have to find ways to connect better with the community. Like even before any of this happens, because we've got to be ready in case there is a big downturn that could go on for who knows how long.
So being proactive and intentional about those, right? I think one thing we talk a lot about is ensuring those are two-way, that we're not going and asking for something, but we're able to provide something in return, whether that's workforce or building space or whatever.
I have this thing.
The whole relationship, and this is my opinion, is between the community and the district is dysfunctional. You know, I'm talking about conversations I have with community members over and over and over again, where all they seem to think is the school is a money pit. And like, okay, it's costing you some money because you have to pay property taxes. But is that all you know about the schools? And if that's our disconnect with the community, that's unhealthy and dysfunctional. Right? It's a problem of they don't feel invested in the schools, they don't have knowledge of what's happening in the schools, they don't know what we're up against in terms of kids showing up. Like, how many hundreds of thousands of kids are showing up not getting their needs met at home? You know, and we're trying to cope with it. And we've got large sectors of the community that just think in terms of the property tax bill. And I'm not pointing fingers. I'm not saying who's to blame for that. I'm just saying that's dysfunctional. It shouldn't be like every few years we have to go and beg people to allow us to get a few more quarters, a few more dollars.
And I think that was our biggest one.
Yes.
So that would be, for me, part of our vision, our priorities, and our plan is in the big long term. How can, I think he keeps calling a porous wall between the schools and the community. Get more people that understand what's happening in schools and more people that care about it and are involved. Does that go on the next page then? You see so much critical gap.
I mean, that would be a gap, use that one, yeah. Right?
So, yeah, I think I'm describing a gap of. Have you lived in a community where everybody, like, there's something going on in the community that everybody's on board with? Right? That's a gap that we don't have that in Marysville, in my experience. To what extent
do your current vision and efforts align with your sense of direction?
To me, they're pretty well aligned. Like, a lot of what we're already doing would...
We've taken some baby steps that direction.
Yeah, would be the kind of things that would have to happen. Like, they'd have to be multiplied to get through a real period of austerity. So the thing I dislike about this scenario the most is to say, well, because the budgets are short, we're going to cut all that innovation we were doing. That seems really short-sighted. And
Another thing that we see go by the wayside is communication, because if budgets are failing, we'll cut our communication. Well, that's when you need communication the most, mm-hmm. right? So that you can tell your story. I think all those pieces that help build the capacity of our community kind of intertwined there. What's missing then, Brian? What strategy are
What's missing?
Maybe engagement of those who are in the community who, you know, there's a lot of people in the community, I think, in any community that, you know, I'm not part of the school.
Yeah, once your kids graduate, you know less. You know, how do we connect with them?
It's hard to connect with them.
I'll tell you what I think is missing. I think what I described, which is a community where we have buy-in, you're never going to have 100%. I think we can have a lot higher percent than we have right now. But what's missing is, I don't know how to get there. I don't actually know the steps. I'm not sure if any of us know the steps that we need to take as a community to get to that kind of engagement, that kind of cooperation that would be necessary to get through something as critical as a situation like this, where we all kind of have to throw in together. We may have to share our buildings, not just the schools sharing the school buildings, but like you were saying, people in the community letting kids come in, you know, with an adult and learn there. Like, how do you get to that point of a real sense of community that we're all in this together in Marysville, and what are we all in together? Educating all of our kids. You know, That's what's missing to me is what are the action steps that lead to that? That seems to me like a complicated long-term problem. And I don't know if I've ever heard anybody say this, you need to do this and this. Like, we'll talk about what do we need to do to get a levy passed, which is like a smaller version of that goal. You know, we talk about
other gaps that we see that exist.
Your current vision and efforts align with your sense of direction.
Well, I mean, I think we're working on
this. Not using that scenario.
We talked about the partnerships. I think we're working with working on that. I don't know if we're there yet. So I don't think that's a gap. We're not where we want to be yet, maybe.
Yeah, I think, I don't even know how to say this as a gap, but just giving ourselves the permission to be that flexible, to not be the
social emotional end of it. So I do
not have the viewpoint that we're the only ones that. The only space kids can learn. Does that make sense to engage with that flexibility?
Well, that's an interesting question because you have people, there's many, many people in the school district, this is their livelihood. And certain kinds of change seem to threaten that. So there's a gap as well, like how do you get teachers on board to say we have to be more flexible, and that might change your position or your
job
position.
Doesn't mean you're invaluable. It just changes that.
And it may even lessen at some point the number of staff that we need. It's really, really threatening to anybody in any field.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But we still may need to do that. We may need to think, you know. And maybe the young teachers already get this. I don't know. Maybe the 25-year-olds already understand. Their profession's going to be changing for the rest of their career. You know, and maybe sometimes in some... So I don't know if that's a gap. Do you think it's a gap, or is that something that the new teachers, the younger teachers, are capable of? Like, they had to do a major shift this year because of the pandemic, but could they... Could they handle more major shifts and how their job is conceived? Or would they just resist?
Well, I'm sure there'll be, it's like everything else. You have those early adopters who jump on board, resistors the whole time. I think it's just, for me, I think it's more the conversation, and I know the role the teachers support in that, don't take that away, but that starting with the idea that students can learn and do learn in very deep ways outside of school. So how do we embrace that and say that's okay and give a check mark in mastery for something they're going to prove to us externally? Does that make sense? I don't know how to articulate that very well. The gap
is where
they struggle.
Like overcoming the constraint of
time and space are not.
Well, here's one of the things that happened this year. At least it looks like it happened. Is some of the teaching was shifted onto parents at home, and some of them couldn't do it. At least that came up at our last meeting where people were, why were the math scores lower? Why was geometry and somebody suggested, well, the parents don't know how to teach that, so they couldn't help their kids. I don't know if that's true or not, but let's suppose it is. That one of the roles of a teacher, let's say 20 years from now, when teaching is more diffused into the community, one of their roles may be helping other adults.
5 minute work.
Helping other adults learn how to teach. Adults that are not professional teachers.
How they work with students, yeah.
Yeah.
Did Jason get us a call set together?
5 minutes. Okay. You know, your job as a teacher may be to coach somebody. Let's just pick an example like Honda. Like if Honda sort of re-geared a little bit so they had more young people over there learning on site. And you had people here in the district that were employed by the district who were coaching them. This is how you do it. This is how you talk to kids. Right? This is how you you know, all the things you learn as a professional teacher that you're supposed to do and you're not supposed to do, that, you know, adult volunteers would need to be coached on.
Right. Yeah.
So that could become more of their job. You know, but the gap there is, I don't know if people would be willing to be that flexible to reconceive their job at, you know, at that level.
And you're kind of embarrassing them for questions.
I think you would know that, Diane, because you're.
You know, we're kind of looked at it like that. You're like, well, things have changed.
Yeah, well, I don't have that answer. Maybe brave enough to explore new areas of flexibility. There may be uncomfortable areas of flexibility. How do you know if this is the veggie?
Yeah, engage
ceremony?
With.
At the second, well, the seventh story of all the buildings downtown, so that you could have two stories.
What was the? Were there any questions?
More people living there. You know, shops and stores and so on, restaurants,
I think this is safe.
For people to be able to come and be part of
it. Yep. I think it's all right.
I mean, and I think currently we promote innovation, promote the philosophy of teachers, coach. But I think we have to keep pushing forward with that.
Promote like coaching teachers?
Well, I mean, we promote the teacher's role in the classroom is more of a coaching model for students as opposed to the giver of information.
Right.
You know, they facilitate learning.
Okay. Is everybody pretty much done?
Well, kind of. We're all
close
over
enough.
The place. It shouldn't be shocking to anyone.
Is Todd completely depressed right now?
You know, Todd is linear. I'm all over
well,
the place.
Our scenario means we're spending less, so I'm
oh,
right
okay.
At home.
He's actually happy. Oh, my gosh. It's like he has a reason to say, I can't spend more.
Yeah, I feel like you picked this scenario.
It was not intentional. So, what I'm hearing is y'all are done, and it's like right on time too. So I applaud you for being timely. So let's have a discussion. So you know, based on the work that you all just did, let's answer those prompts, right? What do you see as those critical gaps? To what extent might your current vision and efforts align with those pieces of alternative futures that you want to work towards? And, you know, what do you see as just missing, right? As we talk about the future and where you might go. So, no particular order in how we share. I just thought we might make this a discussion. So, fire away.
I can go bar group. Mm-hmm. So we're group one, Jason. The most critical gaps we see comes back to our relational / humanness need in education. We want to make sure that continues and is heightened. And then also like measuring success. How do we know we're being successful in a future that we're not necessarily currently experiencing? And then the last thing we talked about, which we could have gone farther with, I think, is just making sure teachers are equipped with not more resources, but really effective resources to be able to make good decisions formatively in real time without the over-reliance on anything. And then we talked about, you know, making sure we're not only taking personalized approaches formally and informally, but also understanding how to personalize the community. Because each year and each kind of season, kids
come together with new needs, both individually and within a group. And so I think we tend to be really good at understanding a student as an individual. Sometimes the need is, okay, how do these individuals, you know, civically engage together and become aware about themselves and the larger group? Do you want me to go through all three bullets?
No, that's whatever you wish to share is that's the perfect amount.
Okay. I think our conversation went further into, we feel pretty aligned with that goal. As long as we stay balanced about our why and very practical about our how. And then we think that the pieces that are missing are, how do we make sure stakeholders are moving with us and are informed with us? Because the further we get on our direction and our strategic direction, the gap widens if we don't partner intentionally, and that includes orienting new staff, helping families understand, and making sure their voices are heard and their needs are met. So that was our discussion.
Terrific. Thank you.
I think we had that. What you just mentioned, Ashley, was one of the gaps that I was worried about a little bit with our group. That you call them stakeholders. I was thinking it was just community, but it's the same thing. There's a gap between what we're doing and what they know that we're doing, what they're bought into. And in our scenario, because it was very dire, it was a situation of austerity and budget cuts, we would have to cooperate with the community. It would be a necessity. And it wasn't clear to me, how do we build that much, much more than what we have so far in the history of this community? You know, I feel a sense of real disconnect between the community and the schools. And that may work under certain periods of history where people just pay their property taxes and they trust the schools to take care of their kids. You know, but it's not going to work under every scenario to have that much disconnection. So that was a gap that I was concerned about. I know we're doing some things, you know, we do what we can. We're working on that, but I think we're like really, really far from having a truly engaged community in the educational mission of public schools.
Well, I think it's pretty clear that all of us are kind of on the same page as far as that importance of working with the community and how do we find ways to explain what our vision is and the work that we're doing and why we're doing it. Because I know that was one of the, when we looked at what was missing in ours, it's just kind of, well, a couple things. First, support for some of those most challenging areas. So the students that are, you know, that we have the gaps with socioeconomic and social-emotional, that's kind of, you know, where do we find more supports there? And then we just really talked about more effective ways to communicate that and more effective ways to partner. And you know, you can have millions of meetings, but unless somebody feels threatened, then they're happy. Things are, you know, my kids are learning, they're doing pretty well in school, they've got lots of activities, so I'm good. And what you guys, and that's what we hire you guys to do, teach our kids. So, you know, to go to that next level where they really are partnering and really are excited about it, that I think is the biggest challenge in our scenario, because our scenario is very rosy. And, you know, some of the, maybe one of the other critical gaps that we found was the complete buy-in of the vision with all staff, all students, and the community, and how to generate enthusiasm when there's so much uncertainty out there. And another critical gap was just that the idea of constantly challenging the status quo, always asking questions, which I think that is something that we do a really good job at. And then as far as aligning, we felt like our scenario aligned beautifully, that we just need to kind of broaden our efforts keep setting and keeping goals, and that would help build trust. So then the innovation that we come up with becomes less scary for our community.
I mentioned in our discussions that doing things like setting goals and working and achieving those, keeping our word, you know, just doing things so that when we act, when we make a decision, when we, you know, when something occurs in the district, the community looks at it and said, well, you said this is what you were going to do, and this is what you did. And it turned out well. And the more times we have that happen, we then get the trust from the community, which is the basis of any relationship. You can't have a relationship without trust.
We also were a little bit, when you talked about some of the factors that you might want to, that are either desirable or that you want to mitigate. I think with the speed of change, we thought, you know, doing our best to control the speed of that change so that it's manageable for everybody. And then also with so many different kinds of technology, in our scenario, again, you know, students had complete flexibility and complete voice and choice and agency. So just making sure that we manage that kind of chaotic feeling that sometimes you get when there's that much flexibility, just to make sure that nobody slips through the cracks. So, and also being cautious of outside agendas and influence that may come from having such robust partnerships. You know, you might get somebody that all of a sudden starts feeling like, hey, you might as well say I'm employed by the school, so I want to do this. And so just being aware of those kinds of things.
That's a critical detail from that scenario. Interesting you highlighted that balance of power and agenda, right? As you have more partnerships in the world. That's an angle to that I hadn't thought of, too. So that's intriguing.
Well, I'm usually pretty Pollyanna-ish. So I think Dick made the comment, you know, that's the reality. Life is usually not all rosy. So
I have a very good friend that works for an intermediate unit or ESC out this way. And, you know, there was a very large tech provider that came to town and said, hey, put us in touch with some districts. We want to give them laptops. And there he pushed back and said, that's great. What do they get for their time in this? And they were like, well, we're big tech company that starts with a G. Why do we have to ask for anything? Because I don't think this is going to work. It's got to be a reciprocal partnership.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I thought that one of your comments was interesting about when people feel threatened, they get engaged. But that's not enough. You know, people can't only get engaged when they're threatened.
I know, right.
And often when they, if that's what triggers them, it's not necessarily productive engagement.
Right.
Yeah.
But we did feel like we were aligned pretty well, didn't we? That the things that we're working on now as a district really do lead into the kinds of things that we would have to have going in that period of austerity.
Yeah. It's kind of like we need a booster shot in every one of the, like,
yeah.
We have worked to have two-way partnerships. That's
yes.
The principals have to explain how it's beneficial to us, but also the partner when we talk about that. So it's just not us asking for something or, so we've been working on that. Do I think we're ready to, you know, have kids wander the streets and engage in, you know, right, we're not there. It's kind of like we've laid this foundation and now we need to keep going up,
mm-hmm.
I think. And we need more, I would say.
Yeah,
so one of the questions then becomes, right, as you become successful in your endeavors at implementing, you know, a personalized learning model with the fidelity that you all have, what else does that make possible, right? So the open world learning, it, for sure, right? Thinking differently about educator roles and who constitutes an educator,
probably thinking wildly differently about supports down the line, or all possible next steps, right? But I like that framing, Diane, of like, as we keep going, what else, right? So the main sphere of influence, the work doesn't necessarily change. It's in accordance with our vision. We've laid out like a great plan, but then like, what else, what else, what else? So we have 3 minutes left. So in those 3 minutes, if I could take Robin, or if Robin and I could take any questions before we wrap up, I'm happy to answer those. Recognize it's not a ton of time, and I apologize.
Well, I don't know if we have questions, but I just definitely want to say thank you. I mean, I'll wait. Sorry. Go ahead.
My question, which of these scenarios is the one that's going to come about?
Remember, defiction, not prediction.
No. Shoot.
It's probably all three, elements of all three.
Okay.
So if you had to rate the trends and learning sheet that you gave us and the broader trends, what would you say is the top items, or are they all equal? Which one's coming first, I guess?
That's a phenomenal question. So there's a certain element of it being subjective, based on where you live, right, and for things like socioeconomic status. But I think climate change and climate volatility and general tech acceleration are the two trend lines that end all trend lines. Because if we cannot develop the social cohesion to figure out how we navigate those larger changes, then it ushers us into a more probable collapse scenario.
Well, I know you said we only have 3 minutes left, and I'm picking up a point that it probably takes about 3 years to discuss, but it, like when you bring climate change in, it's so complicated because we don't really know exactly how Ohio is going to change. But we also don't know, like, what's going to happen to migration from other parts of the country.
Mm-hmm.
We might have some guesses, but we just really don't know at this point.
Yeah, that's the crux of it, right, is that we do know that there will be a change, right, the implications of which we're not sure. So if we had the steady state scenario for climate change, then your area might become an even larger destination for folks to move seeking stability. If other areas of Ohio are impacted more drastically, that ushers us into the austerity phase. Mm. So, and then there's thinking through, like, what does personalized learning and sort of continuity look like in a highly disruptive scenario where you're dealing with things like climate change and mass disruptions to essentially an academic schedule? And you know, you're all so far out ahead of the curve with implementation that it might be less of a disruptive event in terms of continuity than other schools that haven't started their own journey for personalized learning. But it, frankly, you hit the nail on the head, right? It's just, it is highly, highly uncertain how that will roll out. Mm-hmm. And that's the rub.
Yeah, that's kind of how I've tried to explain personalized learning to people, is teaching kids to prepare for the unknown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great way to put it. And owning up that we don't know what the future holds. So this is the best way to get at that, right, is by thinking about your needs, interests, and goals in a learner-centered framework that allows them room to grow in a safe space, fail forward, and you all to really think differently about how to meet those needs. It is. It's preparation for the future. All right, so I want to share my contact info. SwelsonJ@knowledgeworks.org. Should any of you want to discuss the future, any questions bubble up on your drive home after this, feel free to reach out. It has been an honor to spend 2 hours with you and exploring the future. And please let me express my appreciation for all the hard work you're doing to make young people's lives better. in Marysville, and you know, just the hard work of governance alone, it is something to be admired and held up. So thank you for your time. This was a joy for me. I hope that it might be fun for you as well. So Diane, thank you for the invitation. Robin, thank you for the connection, and please let us know how we can be of service.
Well, Jason and Robin, I really want to thank you. I'm sure each one of us want to thank you so much, because just the way that you laid this out, I'm guessing that we all feel pretty similarly, but it really made me think about the future of education and how we're going to be reframing our district strategic plan. You know, just like having these scenarios and really talking through some things. It was a wonderful exercise for all of us. So I can't thank you enough. And Robin, thanks for coming in on your vacation. We appreciate that. Look forward to seeing you in our classroom sometime. And Jason, hopefully you'll come over and visit our school district when they let you travel.
I would love that. Thank you.
Thank you, Jason.
Thank you.
Perfect. Thanks, Jason.
Thanks, Jason.
All right. Thank you all. Have a great night.
You too.
You too.
Guys, good night.
Night.
Good night, Robin.
Happy vacation.
Thank you.
So before we wrap up, we'll continue to partner with KnowledgeWorks and do some of these exercises with our team. Okay. What I'd like from all of you, and really I would say over the course of maybe, what's today, Monday, maybe by Friday, if you all, or if you want to do it now, it's fine with me too, can give me not people's names, but a list of groups of people or organizations that you would want me to reach out to invite a member of their organization to be a part of our strategic planning committee. And we'll engage in some of this work in defining what some of those, you know, pieces are, instead of us maybe handpicking individuals. Mm-hmm. So, for example, it was a chamber, maybe I'll send something to Eric Phillips and say, hey, could you send us one person? So it's more of a random selection. So if you guys wouldn't mind doing that by Friday, and maybe if you could copy the board on everyone's response, and then I'll get working on that before we get back. Okay. So my goal would be by this time next year to have a plan to bring forward to you, definitely give you updates every month, but to have more of a final piece put together about this time next year.
So I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I've done this process, but maybe it's definitely a different place.
Yeah.
So do you guys do like a reflection? Do you spend time going through like the administrative level saying, okay, these were the things that we focused on for the last 5 years. We think we scored a excellent, or this is what we scored. This is what our gap was. Is this something that we're going to continue?
So we don't necessarily score. What we normally ask principals to do is provide evidence. So what did this, how did this look when it came to fruition at your building? Do you have more to do yet? Do you feel like you're in a good spot? Is it something we want to accelerate and hang on to? And we'll also do that to that larger committee. There wasn't a strategic plan in place when I came, so we didn't really reflect on one.
Right. You ask everybody what they like.
Right. So I've been through, you know how you asked last meeting about lengths and changes. So I'm still working through groups with that process. That'll be a part of the larger process. This is what people are telling us. Mm-hmm. These are areas of target improvement. So we will be working with buildings. And as you know, I already met with, or I went to every building at the end of school year and spent time talking to staff to get feedback too. So actually, some of the feedback really wasn't what I would call strategic plan, but more, hey, we don't get together enough as a first grade team across the district. So, you know, we're going to start this school year like that. So we've taken some of that feedback, and others are more kind of high level, you know, this is what we need, like we talked a lot about other opportunities to learn. How can we set up some things that are experiential outside of our walls? Which is a nice alignment to what we talked about tonight. So right. That happens every year anyways. So what are the things that you've done? Are we there? What do you need more time on? Kind of things. Yes. That was a long-winded answer, but yes.
And the goals are different by grade level. Like, things that K through 4 have concentrated on and what they've achieved are different than what when you're looking at the high school level.
Correct. So, under the idea of, like mastery grading, for example, we started much earlier, K-4, than the high school is just on board. So the high school, I would say, is still like a not yet in that area. They're still evolving. Last year was their first year to really play around with it. It wasn't a great year to play around with it, right? And start moving forward, with the exception of the STEM school. So everyone's kind of, although it looks like a bunch of dots.
I know, I was going to say, what happened to the grid?
But it used to, this was an evaluation tool where principals showed where they were on the tenets of personalized learning. Mm-hmm. Now that we don't meet here anymore, we took those indicators down, but right. we do. So what also happens is if one building is more advanced in that area, mm-hmm. then it creates the opportunity for, let's say Karen Wells wants to learn more about it, to build those connections across the district.
I knew that had some kind of pattern. But you know, I've been trying to figure that out the last few times I've been here, and I'm like, I know that there's something there, and you know, like this. And
probably needs to come down.
They don't have a word.
It used to be a grid.
Yeah.
Like buildings. They had the buildings down here.
But I forgot all about that, and I'm thinking, is it a word?
Yeah, they were charting the five tenets of PL. Yeah.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was their charting of their journey.
I just assumed it was decoration.
Yeah.
I just thought it was art.
So if you guys don't mind to do that on Friday, then I'll be kicking that off in August.
How many community members are you trying to bring in?
Last time we had around 40.
40?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But give me lots of names, because a lot of people serve on different things and they won't have time. Mm-hmm. So, some people will say no, or we don't have someone at this time or whatever.
And I'm sure you're looking for a wide range of ages.
Yeah, I mean, really, just given our context tonight, that's why I wanted this conversation to take place.
Yes.
You know, take it in a little bit and then say, okay, well, you know, what about, you know, so-and-so? Or what about, you know, because we want to get beyond just parents,
right.
while we will have parents, obviously, but mm-hmm. what are some other groups and organizations or companies mm-hmm. or, mm-hmm.
Yeah. I get that.
That'd be helpful to me to push it forward. Then what I will do is then lay out, I'll follow through with Robin and Ashley. I'll lay out a plan for the year to kind of give you a time frame and kind of put that in context.
Okay. Sounds good. Any other questions or comments from
tonight? Nope. I appreciate it.
Scary thought.
That was a quick 2 hours.
I know.
Really.
I know.
When you said
it started a little bit late.
I'm like,
That was helpful. Thank you for putting that together.
I was going to ask for that. I have a motion to adjourn,
please. I'll second.
A motion by Mr. Smith, second by Ms. Powers. Roll call.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.